Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and a very happy Easter to you. Easter continues. We're in the midst of the octave of Easter. We're at the very beginning edge of the season of Easter in the Catholic Church, and all that time we're celebrating a great historical fact, a great fact of history, that Jesus got up out of that tomb and walked away. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess he could have, I'm not exactly sure how he, maybe it was a chariot of heavenly horses. I'm not saying I know that. I'm saying he got up, he is risen, and that is our assurance of our own resurrection with him, to be with him in the house of the Father. So much to be happy about. We got a great show for you today. Second hour, Carlo's going to be here, and we're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the papacy. So particularly if you're a person, if you're a fellow Catholic, perhaps, who says, nope, it ain't in there. It's not in the Bible, that papacy that you Catholics point to. Well, yeah, that'd be a perfect hour for you to call and talk with Carlo. This hour, our good friend Liz Kelly is back with us. Elizabeth Kelly is the author of a whole bunch of books. I don't know how many, nine books, I think. Many of them award-winning. Jesus Approaches is among her books. Your Heart, His Home, Prayer Companion is one of them. She's a spiritual director, a retreat leader, a wonderful speaker, and a very fine author. And the new book is called Love Like a Saint: Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. Elizabeth Kelly, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, a lot of your life, it seems to me, is about letting women know and have actual contact with the love that God has for them as individuals and as women. So what got you to write a book about women saints or holy women?
Well, it was interesting because when COVID hit, as for everybody, all of my work dried up in about 4 days.
Yeah.
And I suddenly had a lot of time on my hands, and I had been wanting to write a book about virtue and include in that stories from women in the church that would exemplify these virtues. And so I really started to launch as a result of the pandemic. But I think, too, I wanted to take a peek at some of the virtues that we maybe don't discuss as much as virtue.
Uh-huh.
For example, magnanimity. You know, you may know the epilogue is on the combination of humility and magnanimity and how those two virtues work together. So there was a lot about wanting to invite people into a deeper look at some of the lesser known or lesser discussed virtues.
It's and in doing that, you also got in contact with and share the stories of some of the lesser known women of the Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm. That was really fun. That was probably one of the best parts of the whole book, is that as I was thinking about what virtues to include, these women just kind of found me. And many of them I had never heard of before I started working on this project. For example, Anne de Gagné, the child venerable, who exemplified obedience. We talk about that in her chapter. And so I was really trying to look at women that had not gotten a lot of coverage before. I wanted to learn about them, and it was just so much fun to be able to present them in this collection. So they're not exhaustive hagiographies, but just little glimpses of how each of these women exemplified one particular virtue.
We're actually taking our topic from the title of the book this hour, Love Like a Saint. If you have questions about how to love like a saint, Elizabeth Kelly, the author, is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. So one of the things I note, you do warn us against trying to imitate saints in the particular, in the details of what they did. Like, my life is not supposed to, in its details, look like, say, Catherine of Siena's life, for which I am grateful, frankly, knowing some of the things that she did in the name of love.
Right.
Some
right.
of which I maybe right. better not to mention. But what's that about? That what's the conception then of the idea of being holy in the way that these women are holy, but not necessarily imitating the details of their life?
Mm-hmm. There are some great insights from the saints themselves and obviously from the theologians, but that each of us De Caussade has this great quote. He says, "The life of each saint is the life of Jesus Christ. It is a new gospel." And so we can think about it as every one of us has a way that we are carrying forward the gospel that's particular to us, to our circumstances, to the crosses that we've been given, to the graces that we have, and all of that. And I think it's really important not to compare yourself too much too directly to the lives of the saints. In some cases, there might be a really direct correlation. For example, I was out speaking on Benedetta Bianchi Porro the other day, and I met two young women who suffer from the same disease and, like Benedetta, want to become doctors. I mean, so there are some remarkable times that saints sort of pierce through our reality so that they can help to show us the way. And there are other times when they just want to companion us in our own walk. And comparison is never a good idea, just generally speaking. It's there's a kind of errant posture when we start comparing ourselves to other people anyway. But rather, I'd rather invite people to think about walking with the saints, you know, shoulder to shoulder.
888-318-7884, our number. Elizabeth Kelly, the author of the brand new book, Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. It's from the Word Among Us Press. 888-318-7884. If you have questions about loving like a saint, this is the hour for you. Not all of these women, however, are canonized saints. What's the idea there?
Sure. I wanted to choose women from with broad experience. So we have everyone from Eve Lavalliere, who it's very unlikely a cause will be opened for her anytime soon, just a regular woman who experienced this extraordinary conversion, to a number of saints who have already been either have achieved sainthood, and all along the way. Growth in virtue is a process. It's one step and then another step and then another step. And I was hoping that by choosing women from such a broad expression of holiness and having achieved holiness, that you would see your own path in this. You'd see your own story in this and how you know, we don't all start at saints. I mean, there are some people who are born with extraordinary graces, but there are others of us, like Eve Lavalliere, who was born into an extraordinary trauma and poverty. And if conversion is available even for her after the debauched life that she led, then it's also available for us, and that we don't need to be afraid of where we're starting from. God will meet us wherever it is that we're starting from, wherever you are right now with the virtues and practicing a life of holiness. It's not too late for you, and you are included in this, and your life is an invitation to be that new gospel that Caussade discusses.
Liz Kelly, our guest, 888-318-7884. You talk about being afraid. There's the one side of the call to a saintly life. And you are calling us to a saintly life. You are calling us to live as saints, full of love as the saints were. So the one fear, look, I'm a wretched, miserable sinner. I'm not worthy of that. That's not me. I'll hope to squeak by. But the other fear is, what's God going to do with me if he gets his hands on me? And some of that comes through in the book too, this sense of not being afraid of what God's going to do with you once he gets his hands on you.
I think that's a legitimate fear. Was it Saint Teresa who said, if this is how you treat your friends, I would hate to see how you treat your enemies, right? You know, after all that she had suffered. So, I think that there's a reasonable sense of hesitation sometimes, because the price of virtue, the demands that love places on us, are very great. But that's why they're also worthy, because they are great. And we've all been created with an innate kind of magnanimity, that is to understand it as the capacity to understand what is great, and then the desire to choose that, to work toward what is great, to become worthy of what is great. And I think if anything, our culture is bent on telling us that we're not worthy of greatness, or that we were not created for greatness. We've been kind of robbed of that existential faith in the fact that my existence is a good. You know, my existence is a good, and I am placed here in this life to achieve good things, to help build up the kingdom. More than anything else, I think that's probably one of the primary lies that people struggle with, is that they have no really important part to play, when in fact, everybody has a really important part to play.
Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. Elizabeth Kelly is the author, and she is our guest this hour. Your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. Before we go off to this first break, I'll remind you, spring sale continues over at shop.catholic.com. This is a pretty good sale. I mean, I usually say rush and hurry, but what is this, a month we're going on now of this sale? So who knows how much longer it will be? I don't know, but you get 10 to 25% off everything at shop.catholic.com. Some of the stuff's more than 25% off. Shop.catholic.com, spring sale right now.
Call us now with your question. Hello? On Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for April is Hope to Die with Dr. Scott Hahn and Rob Corzine. Dr. Scott Hahn and Rob Corzine explore Catholic teaching on death and the resurrection of the body, helping us to look forward with hope to eternal life with God. Order your DVD set at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and I want to just keep saying it. Happy Easter to you, especially to those. I mean, I don't know if I want to say especially. Happy Easter to everybody, but we do have a special fondness in our hearts and a joy for those who were welcomed into the church in recent days. First week as a Catholic, maybe just received sacraments for the first time, and we're happy you're here. And we'd love to take your call. And if you're like, my call's not quite, Liz would like to talk with you. I'd like to talk with you. If you're new to the Catholic Church and you've got maybe a question about how to live like a saint now that you're here, that's the title of the book. That's the title of this hour with Elizabeth Kelly, Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. The number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about Yves Lavallière, who you write about in the book. It's striking that such a modern person, I guess. And is that part of what you were trying to do? That, hey, look, this sanctity thing, it's not a medieval thing. This holiness thing is not like that died out in the Middle Ages. This is something for you now.
Yeah, I think that's partly why Eve's story is so compelling. If you don't know anything of her story, she was born in the, when was she born? She was born in the 1860s, I think. 1870s. I'm sorry, I'm so bad about numbers like that. In any case, she lived around the turn of the century. And in about, right at about the turn of the century, she was an actress. She became very, very famous in France. She was very highly regarded. Sarah Bernhardt and other famous actresses just championed her and thought that she was an absolute genius. And, she had been raised by a father who was a costumier. He was also a very abusive alcoholic. And when Eve was just 17, she observed in front of her and her brother, their father shot and killed their mother. He turned the gun on Eve, missed her, and then turned the gun on himself. So she came out of just extraordinary trauma. Yeah. She was placed in an orphanage from which she ran away, and she found herself on the stage in Paris, had extraordinary success, a house on the Champs-Élysées and one in the country and all of the clothes and the glamour. She met kings and queens from around the world. I mean, she just had this extraordinary success in wealth, in fame. And she would remark, though, that she would be visited by a loneliness and a sadness she could not quite explain. By about World War One was in full swing, and she was supposed to go tour the U.S. for a year or something. And she knew before she went there that she really needed a rest. So she moved out to the countryside in France, and she just happened to rent a little chateau that just happened to be under the care of the local parish priest. How or why this is, I'm not exactly sure. The first Sunday she is there, she's resting. The priest comes for a visit, and he says, "Well, I noticed you weren't in Mass this morning." Very gentle, good man. And she said, "Well, Father, I just assumed you wouldn't want me there, knowing who I was, that I'm this actress." And her life was filled with, drug addiction and affairs and, you know, all sorts of drama.
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, you know, you're one of my flock. Of course you should come." And every week after that, she was there. It, within a matter of months, she and the woman she had been traveling with her, she had a maid who traveled with her, were receiving catechesis and visiting every day. Eve became distressed thinking about her life, and if the incarnation was true, what would that mean for her? And so the priest, in just an incredibly priestly, fatherly, pastorally caring way, gave her Lacordaire's biography of Mary Magdalene. It had been written about 20 years earlier, and he said, "Read this, read it prayerfully, read it on your knees, and then we'll talk about it." She did that. Copious tears fell, and when she got up, she was a new woman. Within weeks, she received confession and the first communion she had received since she was a child. And from that day, from the day she received the Blessed Sacrament as an adult, following this conversion, she marked that as her birthday for the rest of her life. She left the entrapments of fame and fortune, the wealth, the houses. She gave everything away, gave up the makeup. There were all kinds of rumors flying, as you imagine there would be in a Hollywood type setting, like, "Oh, she had a beauty treatment, it went wrong, and now she's hideous," you know, or there were other rumors that she was a spy in a German jail. But her conversion was so deep and so compelling. She spent the rest of her life as a penitent and doing service for the poor. Very, very, very moving, moving story.
It's an extraordinary story, too, because I did not know until you exposed me to her about Eve Lavalliere at all. I have no recollection of being introduced to her. But it's a very modern story in that, really, and this is increasing as our society is kind of shattering in many ways. at the root, there's horrible trauma, and people have that. Mm-hmm. And there, many, many modern people have a horrible kind of trauma. And then a life of kind of acting out of that, of that being the, you know, the impetus for a life that's, well, less than virtuous, I suppose. And then,
sure.
And then piling all of that on, this sense of unworthiness then, that I'm not loved, mm-hmm. and I'm not worthy. And here this comes shining into her life. That's really what we would like to mm-hmm. happen to every modern person, is this thing comes shining into your life, this Jesus.
Yeah. And she writes about that. We're fortunate because we have a lot of her correspondence back and forth to friends and who are concerned, you know, why are you leaving this, your life of success? And she would write about how she felt the love of Christ. It was visceral to her. She knew that she was loved. Even with all the debauchery, all the terrible choices that she made, it was none of that filled her. It was this encounter that Magdalene has with Christ at the tomb, which became her story, you know, and this is how it works. We're invited to make the gospel story our story. And it was Magdalene who showed her the way into that encounter. I think that's partly why I wanted to include stories of real women in the book, because they're so convincing.
And I think will be really helpful. I feel like I wish I had this book to put in the hands of either of my daughters at a certain point, because you know,
oh, nice.
We need this. We need someone to look to who we can identify with and who shows us the way. And I really do feel it's a loss that many young Catholic girls are raised. They go to Catholic school. They never see a woman religious. Not by any fault of anyone's. It's just not there in the way that they were. So to meet people like Eve, this can be life transforming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she's just one of the stories in there. I think too about Anne de Gagné, the child, and the way that she exhibited obedience. And, you know, obedience has so fallen out of fashion. We need to be revolutionaries. We need to be insurrectionists. We need to be speaking truth to power. And I mean, I'm not saying that all of that is bad, but it misconstrues or misunderstands obedience as a virtue that is really based on love. And Anne's story of obedience is so moving and so delightful and so compelling, because she wasn't being obedient to a principle or a power or a government or a rule. She was being obedient out of love, because she had fallen in love with the Lord and she wanted to offer this obedience as a gift to him, not because she feared the repercussions of disobedience. Huge, important distinction to make. And we open the book with that because it's really the root of all the virtues. We want to practice the virtues because we are in love, not because we fear the repercussions of not leading a virtuous life.
Yeah, beautifully said. Love like a saint, cultivating virtue with holy women. Elizabeth Kelly is the author, and she is our guest. Your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884. I would like to introduce or allow you to introduce some more of the women in the book, but I would like to get to callers as well. So shall we take some calls and then we'll meet some more of the women in the book? Again, the book is called Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. 888-318-7884 is our number. We go to New York. Spencer watching on YouTube Live. You are first up today. Spencer, go ahead with your question for Liz Kelly.
Hi, I'm thankful to be here. Our Catholic Answers has helped me a lot with my faith.
Praise God.
But yeah, I had a question on scrupulosity. I recently was baptized and confirmed and received Holy Communion on Easter Vigil. I'm very thankful and very grateful. And
welcome.
Such a probably the best moment of my life. I have scrupulosity, and you know, I'm always fearful of offending God. I'm always fearful of sinning against God. And I know that, you know, saints such as St. Alphonsus went through that. And, you know, as someone who's going through a lot of anxiety because of that, and in many cases, actually, my mind telling me this is a sin, or this isn't a sin, or in many cases, you know, my actions being in my mind saying that they are sins when they're not, or they're mortal when they're venial, causes a lot of anxiety. Yeah. And, you know, Sam Vance, since you went through that, I'm sure that maybe you'd be able to help kind of give me some feedback.
Or especially
some,
if maybe some
guidance to help me.
Yeah, maybe is there anybody in the book that went through that?
I think it was a temptation for some. I don't address that specifically in the book. I wish I had, now that you bring up the question. But of course, the first thing that occurs to me is when scrupulosity begins to rear its ugly head and you're getting into thinking and wondering, is this a sin? Is it not a sin? You know, maybe the best possible thing you can do is, rather than asking how not to offend God, turn to him and say, how shall I love you today? How are you calling me to love you today? That's automatically going to put you in a much healthier frame of mind, because you're not even thinking of concentrating on the sin, you're concentrating on loving well. Completely different viewpoint.
Elizabeth Kelly's our guest. I'm sorry we have to head to a quick break, Spencer. Excuse me for that. Love Like a Saint is the book. 888-318-7884. Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today, or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. It's free, and you'll have instant access to our daily broadcast, the schedule of upcoming shows, and you'll even be able to search the archive and listen to thousands of past shows. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Got our names can be fascinating to discuss.
We'll do just that tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
Now more of Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. As always, having a great time talking with Elizabeth Kelly. She produces very, very fine books, and you can find them wherever good Catholic books are sold. You can probably find them where bad Catholic books are sold, as long as they slip a few good ones in there. Jesus Approaches among them, Your Heart, His Home, A Prayer Companion, and many others. Love Like a Saint is the new book. It has an absolutely stunning picture on the cover that I had never seen before of the Visitation. A striking, striking picture. Congratulations on that, by the way. I don't know if you found it or somebody else
found it,
but that's a beautiful cover.
No, the publisher found it, but yeah, it's a gorgeous one. Yeah.
And it's very, how shall I say this? I sometimes feel like there can be in our hyper kind of feminist vigilance of the modern times, a loss of appreciation for the absolute magnificently beautiful feminine side of Christianity, mm-hmm. of the whole Judeo-Christian tradition. And it is not lost in this painting, in this beautiful painting of the Visitation. The feminine is celebrated and loved and beloved in the Catholic faith, in the Christian tradition, by Jesus himself. Isn't that the case?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also just an extraordinary strength within the church.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to downplay it as though it were a weakness that needed to be medicated out of us. And it's the exact opposite. It is a great, tremendous strength that needs to be cultivated just as surely as masculinity or any other gift that we've been given. We need to cultivate it, steward it properly, and give it back in service to the world.
And learn from these women like Elizabeth and Mary, and you mm-hmm. mentioned Mary Magdalene, with the close of the Age of Revelation, the close of feminine genius among saints, that never has come. They're still up to today. The Church is producing these magnificent women, many of whom you've located and told us about, and drawn lessons from in your book, Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. By the way, we'd love to take your calls. 888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. I think many people will just want to hear about these magnificent women. One of the things you said, and this will be related to, I want to ask you about Josephine Bakhita. One of the things you said before the break really struck me, that the world wants to convince us that the way forward is this insurrectionist and revolutionary way, and we all have to be somehow involved in this. And that's actually not the Christian vocation. The Christian vocation is to love, and to love like a saint. And they're quite distinct. They're two separate ways, and they're not alike. Why do you think the way of love is the more worthy way? Why do you pick that?
Well, I think, you know, I'm here in Minnesota, which was ground zero for the recent riots around the death of George Floyd and other things. And I can remember observing some of this, and I was trying to recall, was there a moment when Jesus was ever violent? And what would that be? And what would that mean? And of course, we have the episode of him turning over the tables in the temple, where you could argue that he was destroying property. Of course, he doesn't hurt a human being,
right.
But he drives out this corrosive poison. And what's the very next thing he does? They start bringing him people, and he heals them. And so this becomes a microcosm. I want to drive out of myself whatever corrosive sin is in there to create space for healing. That has to be the model for us as a culture. Yes, we want to get rid of any poison that is tainting or stripping away the dignity that the temple required, because it was God's house, you know, it was holy, and they were damaging that. And so I want to become God's temple. I want to make a holy space for him, and then invite others into that so that they can be healed. And there isn't anything about insurrection in that. There wasn't anything about revolution in the pejorative sense of the word. It was all about reclaiming holiness, reclaiming sanctity, and then inviting others into that holy, safe, sanctified place so that Jesus could heal them. That's it. You know, that's it.
888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. It's amazing the people who fall in love with Jesus and then want to be part of that healing that accompanies mm-hmm. Jesus. When you think about how horribly they suffered in their life, and certainly Josephine Bakhita is one of the most shocking, horrible stories of abuse, But it's also this unbelievable story of love because of the choices that she made. Will you tell us about Josephine Bakhita?
Sure. She was stolen as a child by Arab slave traders. It was very common, still is common, in fact, today in that part of Africa. She was sold into slavery, and not just slavery. It was an extraordinary daily beatings, abuses, physical abuses of just excruciating proportions. She received tattooing, which is just so horrifying. You can read about it in the book or anything on Josephine, but just horrible, horrible suffering. Through she was stolen at about 8. She wasn't quite sure how old she was when she was taken. Never saw her family again. Never saw anyone from her village again. Through the years, she eventually was made her way to Italy. She was sold and then sold and then sold a third time. And the gentleman who purchased her as a slave in Italy, she was eventually in a position to, in Italy, slavery was illegal. And when the family that owned her, thought of her as a slave, wanted to take her back to Africa, she had had this extraordinary connection and was beginning a conversion and catechesis in the church. And at that point, she said, no, I can't go back to Africa. I want to stay here. I want to become Catholic. And she did. Now, we can't underestimate the amount of courage it took for her to say no to this white family, who all intents and purposes was good to her. They weren't beating her. It was certainly a step up from what she had experienced before. They had made her basically the governess to their young daughter. They trusted her completely. The daughter loved her. She loved the daughter. It was a very genuinely affectionate relationship. But they wanted her to go back to Africa, and she absolutely refused. She was not going to do it. It became such a huge event that even the highest courts in the land were consulted in Italy at the time, and her owners were told slavery is illegal in Italy and she has the right to stay here if she wants. She does stay. She becomes Catholic. Eventually, she discerns a call to religious life, and she spends the rest of her life as a religious in Italy, doing missions and working very simple jobs. She was the porter at the convent for many years. She had other similar, very simple jobs. Now, one of the extraordinary pieces in her story is, even as a child, she would look at the world around her, the stars in the sky, and think, this is so beautiful, this is so vast, and I want to know who made them. You know, she had this desire to know the maker, the creator. And not only that, but she recognized that there was something great that had created and made all that was beautiful. Even in her captivity, she would be visited by these notions of seeing the beauty of the earth and knowing that someone had created them and created them out of love and for her, that she should delight in him and in his creation. So she was born with just an extraordinary kind of faith. There was sort of an infused faith that was natural to her. And then on encountering Christ in the cross, and in particular, the Byzantine Madonna that she would see daily in Italy was a black Madonna with a black child. And as these things began to speak to her, she suddenly was able to fill out the picture of this longing that she had had for her entire life. It was kind of like the meat came on the bones all of a sudden. And so it was very quick for her to fall in love with Christ. You know, it wasn't difficult for her. There was already this groundwork. And even through all this terrible abuse, kidnapped as a child. You can't imagine anything worse. She would reflect often later in life that she believed God was with her at every moment, even in those terrible moments, that he never abandoned her and that he was always looking out for her. Just extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. And Josephine Bakhita is Saint Josephine Bakhita now. Mm-hmm. So she did live and love like a saint. The title of Elizabeth Kelly's book is Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women, if for no other reason than to meet Josephine Bakhita. If you haven't met her, a great reason to get the book. But it's just full of extraordinary women. Here's the thing. Josephine Bakhita didn't cry out for justice for the rest of her life. She said very strange things like, I'm grateful for my suffering because it brought me to Jesus. I don't think most of us are capable of that.
She, not only that, she said that if she were to encounter her captors, she would thank them and forgive them, because as a result of that, she found faith in God, and she wouldn't have traded that for anything. That's a tough mouthful to swallow.
It sure is, isn't it?
But reading about her, reading her letters, hearing from her own voice, because she told one of the sisters who wrote down her story, you don't doubt for a minute that she absolutely means it.
Yep.
She absolutely means it. It, that forgiveness, that reality, that if I had not gone through all of this, I would not be where I am now. It wasn't something she just made up or conjured so that she could get through the day.
That was her lived experience.
Earnest.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And to the degree that that's not ours, Elizabeth, I would say, we just don't know Christ like she did. That she put such a high value on knowing him that anything was worth it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons that her story is so compelling, because every life has its injustices. Every life does. I don't know anybody who hasn't ever suffered an injustice at some point or another. And most of us are not going to suffer the injustices to the degree that she did, you know, being literally robbed from her own life and not even knowing her African name. You know, she never even knew her own name. But just spending time with her, and I hope that the book feels like that. A number of people who have read it have said it feels like these women just come in and sit down in my living room and like tell me their story. In befriending her in that way, I'm so convinced of her.
Yeah.
I'm so convinced that it's so true. That I just want to spend more time with her and ask for that grace to be visited on me if, you know, injustices come my direction. But, you know, she had extraordinary courage, too. And I think that it takes a lot of courage not to hold the grudge, not to hold the resentment for the rest of your life. Look at what happened to me. You know, and she had extraordinary courage to set that down. And she spent the rest of her life talking to people about it. She wasn't shy about talking about what happened to her. And when other people suffered similar things, she obviously had such deep compassion for them. It was just beyond words. But that allowed her then also to really embrace joy. I find it really compelling and interesting that her fellow sisters thought of her as very funny, and that she had even a silly streak.
Yeah.
You know, she was very fond of telling this story of a little child who came up to her and said, "Did you eat too much chocolate?" And she said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, your skin is brown. It's like chocolate. Did you eat too much chocolate?" You know, she was very fond of telling that story of how a little child wouldn't understand race or anything like that. And
well, her heart was lightened. Like you get the sense of her heart was lightened by her love of Jesus.
Yeah, Yeah.
Liz Kelly's our guest. Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women is the book. Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Several times, Liz, throughout this, as you've described these holy women, you've talked about falling in love. When we come back from this break, I want to ask you about falling in love with the Lord. More on Catholic Answers Live with Elizabeth Kelly right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
You know, you get paid in heaven for the ministry that you do on here. I love your show. My life has completely changed through God's power and through His revelation. I've changed myself and my life. All my first fruits go to God, and I remain in God. I pray all the time. Your show is in my prayer.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Hey, second hour, Carlo Broussard's going to be here, and we're going to do the Bible blueprint for the papacy. If that sticks in your craw, if you're a fellow Christian and that papacy thing just sticks in your craw and you don't see that anywhere in the Bible, you are the perfect caller. Call and chat with Carlo next hour, 888-318-7884. You're welcome to call this hour as well to talk with Elizabeth Kelly, the author of a brand new book called Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. It's available from the Word Among Us Press. Elizabeth Kelly, a prolific Catholic writer, speaker, retreat leader, and you should find out more about her. Tell me, first of all, I forgot the website, Liz K.
Oh. LizK.org.
LizK.org.
Shortest website on the planet.
I didn't forget, actually. I thought I forgot, but I didn't forget because that's what I was going to say. I want to ask you about this idea of falling in love. Loving like a saint involves falling in love. You just don't love like Josephine Bakita did. You just don't give up a great acting career like Yves Lavalliere did without something happening. And you describe it as falling in love. Can you say more about that?
Sure. I think especially in Yves' case, I don't know that she had ever had the experience of being loved just for who she was. She was adored. You know, people
right.
admired her. She had many people who wanted to be near her because of this genius gift that she had. But that's not the same as being loved as a daughter, as a child of God. And it wasn't really until she encountered Magdalene's story that she was able to see herself in that same capacity. And I think, you know, Magdalene's often portrayed as someone who has just fallen so crazy in love with the Lord that everybody else has gone away, but she is going to hang out at the tomb because she just can't stand the thought of not knowing where she is. She's just going to keep searching for him, keep looking for him. And in the end, he finds her as he did all the time, you know, in the first place. And I think Eve had that same experience. She was kind of like out looking for something to fill that void. And what she discovered is that, you know, love came to her instead and discovered her and loved her in a kind of complete way. I think there is an aspect in that where of falling, of surrender. It's not even about why I'm going to choose to love. It's almost like you can't help yourself. You're just going to throw yourself into this river and allow yourself to be carried away by it because it's just so inviting.
This is such an important, I mean, it's just an important idea in that we forget that our fundamental thing is to introduce other people to Jesus. And why? Why introduce them to Jesus? Because he's wonderful. And to be loved by him and to love him is wonderful.
Yeah, right, right. No, I think that's definitely a theme with all of the women in the book.
Yeah,
sure.
A caller from Ypsilanti, Michigan, Lawrence, listening to EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are up next, Lawrence. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Elizabeth Kelly. Lawrence?
Hello.
Hi, Lawrence.
Yes, this is Father Deacon Lawrence. You're talking about St. Makita, which I just turned this on about 10 minutes ago.
Yes.
A lot of similarities in the love and the forgiveness as a Romanian Orthodox monk that I knew that passed away about 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember, you know, he went through a lot of persecution in Romania.
Sure.
And, you know, he said that he thinks he spent 11 years in prison, and his older sister was the abbess at the monastery. She said he was beaten up so much he doesn't know. He doesn't remember he was in there for 13 years. But there's an interview that I've seen where, you know, the interview is asking him, you know, how could you forgive these people? And he says, well, it's like Jesus on the cross. And I missed the time frame of what St. Makita lived, and just curious about more information about it. I'd like to get the book.
Wonderful. Thank you. Can you maybe give us a time frame, and then I'll tell you how you can get the book.
Sure. Makita lived, well, we think she was born about 1869, and she died in 1947. And she had her conversion. She entered the church. Let's see. Remind me what year that was. I want to say in the early 1900s, because she spent a long, long time as a Cnosian sister. I can't find the date. I'm sorry. But in any case, that gives you a sense of when she was living.
And Father Deacon Lawrence, the publisher is The Word Among Us Press, and the book is called Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. And so you can go to their website, The Word Among Us Press. Okay?
Very good. Thank you very much.
All right. God bless you. Thank you for that. It's fascinating to hear the story, too, because, you know, you think Josephine Makita's story is so extraordinary. Turn around in a Catholic church and you're going to find another extraordinary story.
Well, sure. You'd think about Cardinal Pell.
That's a good point.
You know, there's like, yeah. You know, there are all kinds of examples of people who are suffering really grave injustice and managing it with such grace and freedom. This is one thing you notice about Makita, is that she had been enslaved, but you would not meet a freer soul than Josephine Makita.
Right. Liz, I want to get Judy on in Houston, Texas, because we're just getting very short of time. And Judy, go ahead real quick. You're going to have to be very quick with your question, Judy.
Yes. Hello. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. I'm very intrigued by your book, and I was just trying to find out if you could give some tips as to how you might start being a holier woman when you've got a full-time job and you're doing all these things all the time. What are some starting points?
Thank you, Judy.
Sure. Great question, and the book is really designed to be an engagement piece. So every chapter has questions for journaling and discussion. It also has prompts for prayer, for praying about that specific virtue. So it's filled with resources like that. There are several appendices that talk about how to pray for different virtues and things like that. So the book is really meant to be kind of a workbook. So you're not just left with the stories, but you're really given some mechanisms to work on praying through and thinking about those virtues.
Judy, you caught us right at the end, but I'll give you the name of the book again and the publisher, and you can grab this beautiful new book from Elizabeth Kelly. Love Like a Saint, Cultivating Virtue with Holy Women. Love Like a Saint. It's from The Word Among Us Press. You can find it on their website, The Word Among Us Press. You could probably go to Liz's website too, lizk.org. Is that right? You can find out about that.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Kelly, thank you again for another very, very fine hour, and congratulations on a beautiful book.
Thank you, Cy. Happy Easter.
Oh, happy Easter to you too. I hope we'll see you again very, very soon. Coming up, Carla Broussard, we're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the papacy. And I'm trying to lay the groundwork for somebody to have a little bit of a challenging conversation with Carla. So if you don't believe that Bible blueprint's there, 888-318-7884. Right back.